friends, or maybe more. Earn a 20 quid free bet for every friend you refer to Paddy Power, thanks to our Friends with Benefits programme. Log in to your Paddy Power account and share your referral link to get started. Terms and conditions apply. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
Hello and welcome to this Monday postcast. I'm Maddie Plough, joined in the studio by Tom Park, Nick Watts and Stuart Riley, full studio for this Cheltenham Festival review. The week's been and gone, and what a week it was, full of drama, thrills and spills. How was your week, Parky? I think judging by our quick chat beforehand, you probably fared best in the punting stakes.
Yeah, I had a very good week. Best festival I ever had. It was mainly down to Thursday. Well, yeah, maybe it is a coincidence that they all came on Thursday when the favourites came in, I don't know. But yeah, Wednesday and Thursday, very good days. Good day on Tuesday as well. Gave them a bit back on Friday. But
Paid for the wedding?
Not quite, but there's a very big chunk towards it, a lot bigger than I was expecting. So when you get a Yankee up, you tend to get a decent payout. So yeah, without after timing too much, it was a good day on Thursday.
Yep, fair play. Tuesday, I think, would have been a difficult day for everyone. Watsy, you had a decent payout with Nico de Boinville doing you a favour.
Yeah, he did me a big favour because it was the only shout I had all week, really. So I was clinging on Friday. I wasn't expecting him to win with Pentland Hills, and especially not after they jumped the first and nearly parted company. And then I was just counting down, hoping that Mark Walsh would. I think it was Barry Geraghty in second as well, didn't overtake him on the final few races, but luckily he held out, and yeah, that was it was slim pickings, but it was something at least.
Yeah, I had an absolutely abysmal festival on the punting front, Stu, and it sounded like you were coming from a similar place.
Yeah, I wasn't even afforded the slim pickings that Watsy had to nourish himself upon, so the less said about that, the better.
Right, okay, so we'll crack on then with this review, starting off with the Champion Hurdle, a result that I think if you would have told most people beforehand, they would have been really shocked. We came into it with the big three, Bouvardel, Larina and Apples Jade, none of which finished in the top three. What did you make of the race, Parky?
Yeah, very strange. I don't really know quite what to make of it. At first, I thought maybe they'd gone a bit quick. Like Apples Jade just really wasn't anything like the horse we've seen. And it wasn't even like last year where she kind of looked at one point like she was going to go and win that mare's race.
Yeah, she was never happy.
She wouldn't have been in the frame in that mare's race last year or this year. She was just completely flat.
Scope dirty, they've said since, haven't they? That's such a shame that she just can't seem to produce her best at the festival.
Yeah, I mean, look, this is a couple of times now in a row that she's done that. But she's probably my favourite, certainly my favourite mare in training, one of my favourite horses in training. She's very, very talented. That's not the Apples Jade that has been doing all of the things that she's been doing in Ireland this season. Look, Bouvardel fell. Who knows what he'd have.
Do you think he would have won?
I think it's very hard to say. I'm of the opinion that the winner won really well. And is look, if a horse wins by 15 lengths, Bouvardel is still going to have to be 15 lengths better than Melon. He was only, I get that the race has panned out a lot different to last year, but he's only beaten Melon a neck the year before. I think people will be very quick to discount the winner. And look, if they were to race it against each other this season, I can't imagine they will. I imagine one will be going to Ireland, one will possibly be going to Aintree. But if they were to race against each other again this season, I would probably be in the camp of Espoir de Laine on the basis that I'd imagine the bookies would probably favour Bouvardel. I think he was a good winner. You can't knock a Champion Hurdle winner of 15 lengths.
Yeah. What's it take some doing as a five-year-old as well? Obviously, he didn't make the festival last year. He was sort of anti-post favourite for the Triumph Hurdle, but it was an awesome performance, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. As Parky said, there's nothing you can take away from him. It was a very fluent performance. He won really nicely. It's not his fault that a couple of the others didn't quite run their races, Apples Jade being one in particular. Bouvardel, it wasn't a total shock to see him fall. He's been getting lower and lower over his hurdles. There was a warning sign at Kempton over Christmas when he made a bad mistake when he lost to Verdana Blue. Nicky Henderson said it afterwards, the way he hurdles, there's such a fine margin between getting it absolutely spot on, just getting a bit too low and clipping the top.
At that fast pace.
So that was unfortunate for him to go so early in the race.
Larina, what do we make of her? I mean, it looked to most people Ruby Walsh was sitting there with a double handful and it was a question of when's he going to let her go, but he said afterwards
he was bluffing.
Yeah,
he didn't have much in the tank at any stage, and Woody Mullin said something afterwards which interested me. He alluded to the fact that maybe she didn't have enough match practice prior to the race, and that's something that we all said. I don't see that you can go to a championship race on the back of a campaign like she's had when she's just not been tested remotely at Sandown or on her latest start on a so-called prep race in Ireland. You just can't go into championship races like that. And I'm amazed that at some stage during the season they can't have found something for her, somewhere with just enough give in the ground to be able to give her a bit more match practice, because that's what transpired. And she looked not out of her depth, but she never looked.
She just didn't pick up at all, did she?
Didn't pick up at all. And it might be that, you know, with another year on her back with that race under her belt, she might come to the fore again next season. But I imagine you might see her in different races next year. But I think the preparation, that's what it was all about for the horse this year. And I think they got it wrong. I think they were too light on her.
Yeah.
She needs a fence, doesn't she? I've never seen a horse that just... I mean, I was watching them in the parade ring, and I'm not one to go and watch horses in the parade ring that often, to be honest, but...
Too busy in this village.
Well, yeah, I made an effort to go and see her, and she was no different to any of the chasing types that were walking around who were geldings. I was surprised they didn't go chasing with her this year. I imagine they'll be more tempted to go chasing with her next year.
Yeah, you'd certainly think we'd never see her in a race like the Champion Hurdle again. I must admit, I saw her on Monday and I thought she was the most gorgeous looking horse. She has a real aura about her. Stu, who would you most likely be looking at for next year's renewal? You can't stray too far from the winner, can you?
I think the winner is probably the most obvious starting point. There's several factors here. The first one being, we always talk about how difficult a Champion Hurdle is for a five-year-old. Nine-year-olds have a worse record in the race. Since Persian War, which was about 50-odd years ago, he won it as a five-year-old. Since then, there have been 5 5-year-old winners, 4 9-year-old winners. So that's the task up against Bouvardet next year. He'll be 9 by next year's Champion Hurdle. It's very hard for 9-year-olds, just as much as we go on about it for 5-year-olds. The other thing that's really interesting about 5-year-olds, which Espoir d'Alin was, is the simple fact that of those other 4, 3 of them were multiple winners of the race. Only Catch It didn't become a multiple winner of the race. So 5-year-olds that win the race have a very good record at backing up in the race. The one thing that I do think is very interesting with the way this year's race panned out, and Parky touched on it earlier about how hard they went in the early stages, it had a massive impact on the race. So I've done some hand timings myself on the Ballymore, the Supreme and the Champion Hurdle. Now, obviously, the Ballymore is the next day, but same course, similar type of horses. They finished quicker in the Ballymore than they did in the Champion Hurdle. That's how hard they went early in the Champion Hurdle, to the point that in the Supreme and the Champion Hurdle, there was about half a second in it at the line, total time, start to finish. But jumping, I think it was 6 out, so third hurdle into the race, the Champion Hurdle field was 5 seconds up on the Supreme.
Yeah.
And they generally go hard in the Supreme. That's how hard they went in the Champion Hurdle. It's why the race absolutely blew apart coming down the hill. Apple's Jade had tapped out by the top of the hill. Lorena tapped out as they came round the bend. And Espoir d'Alin just kept going.
Yeah.
So I'd say it was a very strong staying performance. I would be slightly worried next year on better ground, off a more reasonable gallop. I'd suggest he could be vulnerable in those circumstances.
Yep.
But the simple fact is, we don't know. We've not seen him tested in that way. And the test that he had, he passed with flying colours. So yeah, he would be the best place I would start looking for a winner.
Yeah, okay. We'll move on then to the Champion Chase. Now, Altior, he did get there. He did win it. Great win. I think that was 18 in a row from him. Big Bucks' his record. He looks like he's absolutely dying for a step up in trip now, doesn't he, Parky? I mean, he looked at his... Would it be fair to say he looked at his most vulnerable the other day?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he's never looked... He's looked vulnerable before, but he actually looked beaten jumping the last.
Yep.
I even thought that the way Politolog finished, that he was going to... He kind of fought off the challenge of Soral, and then Politolog came again, and I thought he was going to get beat again. But then, as he's shown so many times, he has this attitude where he just digs in, and that was a grind out of a victory, which you don't expect from a champion chaser, a two-time champion chaser, and a horse on his kind of run. Bit similar to what... I'll just allude back to what Nick was saying on Bouvardet with regards to Altior. He's kind of... he's done all this winning. He's won so many in a row. And surely the horse is probably, maybe the horse is just getting a little bit like bored of all of like of reproducing these performances. Mm. Maybe he's just not as switched on as he once was. And the step up in trip, look, he's still got the speed for 2 miles. You saw the way that he's actually found extra and then bolted up them last few yards. But the step up in trip's surely going to help. And look, the connection seems sweet on going for the King George. That's going to be a hell of a spectacle if we're getting some of the Gold Cup field. Yeah. You're getting Surname possibly in there. That's going to be a mouth-watering clash. And he looks like he needs it now.
Yeah.
And there's no reason to suggest he's not going to stay. He's probably going to be better for the step up and trip.
Yeah, I think so.
My worry's always been, he's such a brilliant horse, so it's maybe it's harsh of me to say it, but I've always had a little worry about the way that he jumps. He can sometimes be messy at one, can sometimes be a little bit sloppy. Got a horse like Surname, doesn't matter what trip, going at them on a stride every one. It's going to get, Altior's going to have to be 100% focused, and he looked like he'd kind of lost a little bit of that sharpness. So.
Okay, that's really interesting. For me, Watsy, the main talking point in this race was the ground. Last year in the Champion Chase, Nico said it was the sticky ground that got him. If you go back to his Sandown win in the Tingle Creek, that was wet ground. This was very sticky, tiring ground, and for me, that's his sort of worst case scenario, if you like, and that's why he was put under so much pressure. What do you think? I mean, he's beaten those horses before, and he's beaten them a lot more impressively than he did in the week.
Yeah, I think
is that sort of a career low, if you like?
Not a career low, but I think you're right to say, you know, mention about the ground. It did seem to impact his jumping. It was untidy at times, and when he needed big jumps at the last two, he didn't get them, and that's what put him on the back foot with Sir Royal one side and Politologue on the other. It was also quite a funny race because two horses, himself, they kind of detached themselves off the front, and there was a larger group behind them, and that was partly tactical. As Paul Nicholls said afterwards, he wanted to come late with one run on Politologue and just see if they could do him. And it almost worked. Is there a chance we'll see Surname and Altior running a celebration chase at Sandown at the end of the season? I mean, that would be very interesting to see that. I know Surname's been doing it over longer trips, but I'm sure his jumping is so good that he travels so well that he could be a match over 2 miles. And I'd love to see that race. I mean, it might happen next season on Boxing Day, but if we could get a little hors d'oeuvre in on them. Whitbread Day. Just to tide us over. I think that'd be fantastic. And it wouldn't be a done deal in my book. Altior beat San Benedetto in it last year. So obviously beating up inferior horses, not doing it very impressively. He would have to be on his game to beat an informed Surname in that celebration chase. That'd be a fantastic way to end the season.
Yeah, interesting they talk about Surname as either going there, dropping back to 2 miles, or going down to Bunchestown and going up in trips. So he's obviously a horse who needs a very certain set of conditions. Stu, are you as negative perhaps as the rest of us have been on Altior, or do you just think, admire him for what he's done? And he is exceptional, and he always overcomes the doubt, doesn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. He is exceptional. I would tend to agree with what's already been said. He looks like he is crying out for a step up in trip. There can't be too many horses that were going into a Champion Chase as a very short priced favourite, and connections were already talking about a King George. I think the feeling there for a while has been that he's looking for a step up in trip. The one thing that I would mention with him, because yes, it wasn't as impressive a performance as perhaps we were hoping for, he also produced a slightly quirky or interesting, disappointing performance last time at Ascot, where he was jumping slightly to his left. Yeah. And, you know, there were question marks that day. There are question marks here. I wouldn't be surprised if there was just something niggling at him. It's not anything big, but I think it wouldn't surprise me if something came out. There was a reason why, because on all known form, he's performed massively below himself to only beat the likes of Politologue and So Royal by less than 2 lengths. We know he's a vastly superior animal to them. So that just wouldn't surprise me if something came out like that. And then if there is a reason, there is an excuse, they get that sorted next season, I'd see no reason why he can't re-establish himself.
Yeah, OK. We'll take a quick break now, but we'll be back to look back on some of the other big contests at Cheltenham just after this.
Paddy Power Games has over 250 of your favourites to play online, and we're going to attempt to name them all in this 10-second ad before the T's and C's kick in. There's Blackjack, 18+, bgambleaware.org.
Welcome back to this Monday postcast. Now it's time to have a look back on what was a really memorable renewal of the Ryanair Chase. We've got to start with the winners, of course, Briony Frost and Frodon. Just an unbelievable little horse. Watts, you'll go to you first this time. We've got Briony just behind us on the screen, and it really seems as though this success, although a woman had won a Grade 1 at the Cheltenham Festival before with Katie Walsh winning the bumper last year on Relegate, it really seems like this success resonated with a lot of people and reached out to the wider public. It meant a lot, didn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Briony is box office, isn't she? She's such a... I wouldn't say eloquent. She's a brilliant speaker in her own way. She's got a way of transmitting what she's experienced in the saddle through the microphone to us people listening and watching her. And her enthusiasm is just so infectious. I mean, she obviously absolutely adores what she's doing. And the nice thing about her is that she kind of deflects credit away from herself and gives it to the horse. You know, yes. She said we were beaten at the last, but Frodon said to me, you know, we're not stopping. Don't let me down now. We're going for a big one at last. We're going to win this. And... I think that's why it resonates. People have more of an empathy with the horses involved and with Frodon about what he's been going through and the effort that he's been putting in to have that kind of performance. And a tremendously tough horse, because don't forget, I mean, he won the Cotswold Chase the time before over a longer trip. That is often a really brutal race in horrible conditions at the end of January. He was all out then to see Ophelegan escape, probably at the very, very far end of his stamina range. So to get over that, come back, win the Ryanair against some really good horses and against other horses too that were coming back in trip. There was a lot of similar horses in there, like Road to Respect, Three Miler coming back, Monalee, Three Miler coming back in trip.
Who obviously has won over Shorter as well. So there was lots of dimensions to it, wasn't there?
There was, and there was, I'm sure Stuart's got the fractions, but there was a lot of potential in there for a big burn-up up front, you know, with all these horses that really want a stamina test over the trip. Frodon was the one that coped with it best, always kept in his rhythm, always jumped really well, as he does, metronomic all the time, getting great leaps. And he's got that fight in him at the end, to that will to win, to get it done.
Yeah, Parky, we've had a conversation about quite a few jockeys over the past week. Obviously, punters, hard luck stories, you know, it's always easy to have a go at jockey. But Briony Frost, she seems to just present horses at fences in such a different way. And I think you said to me you've never seen a jockey like her ride fences like that.
I've never seen a jockey who gets... It's not just Frodon that she gets to jump. Frodon was a brilliant jumper before. Take nothing away from Frodon. But she's got this amazing ability... that the horse seems to see a stride. It's as if she's got this connection with the horse. And I think what's he saying about her, we can completely understand when she comes out of the race, she's saying, oh, come on, mate, we're going to get over. That's that feeling that she's trusting the horse, horse trusts her. It's not just Frodon that's pinging all of these fences every time. She's got a similar understanding with Milan's Bar. She's had a similar understanding with a lot of other Paul Nichols horses, with other horses from other yards. She's just got amazing rhythm.
Black Courton horses like that,
And amazing rhythm, and Black Courton, that was the one I was thinking about. And her desire to win reflects on the horse, because we're looking at this horse thinking, oh, he's so hearty, but that also comes from the jockey. I think she's brilliant. She's not just a brilliant female jockey, she's just a brilliant jockey, full stop.
Yeah, I think it's good to get that point out there. Stu, let's talk about Paul Nichols, because what he's done with this horse is crazy, really. I think, I'm not sure if many other trainers would have been able to replicate this. He said afterwards that he had to get the horse very, very fit, and he knew that. But he seems to be able to achieve things with horses that other trainers wouldn't have even thought about. And I think we've got to mention him in this story as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, Frodon's not just the only example of this. You look at his main Gold Cup horse, was Clander's Oboe.
Yeah.
The two of them have both come from juvenile hurdling. Now, that isn't a playground that most people go to with really classy staying chasers of the future. It's tended to be the domain of X flat horses and French breds that are more precocious, and that's been your sort of Triumph Hurdle mould. Now, he's gone down the juvenile hurdle route with these two horses, and he's turned them into absolute gems. But they've taken a lot of time and a lot of polish, and he has put in that hard work to identify them, bring them on and develop them. And you watch the way they've come on this season. I mean, Clem Desobo started the season getting absolutely thumped in a Betfair chase, went and won a King George. You look at Frodon, started the season in handicapping, and he's come all the way through to winning a Ryanair. It's a fantastic journey that he's been able to take these two horses on, and just that ability to keep finding and getting more from his horses. He really is... you know, right up there as one of the best around at just getting horses to mind themselves.
Yeah, okay. And moving on to another similarly memorable triumph was Paisley Park's victory in the Stairs Hurdle for owner Andrew Gemmell, Emma Lavelle as well, and Aidan Coleman, two really deserving people of that success. He was pretty sort of breathless in the end, Watsy. I mean, he looked as if he was beaten, and then he always seems to find that second gear, a bit like Altior in a way.
Well, he very much reminds me of Big Bucks.
Yeah.
You know, I'd probably get pilloried for saying that because Big Bucks obviously won 18 in a row. I'm not saying Paisley Park will do the same thing, but I remember when Big Bucks won his first Stayers Hurdle, Punchestown's as well, clear, going towards the final flight, Big Bucks under pressure. But between the turn-in and the last hurdle, he'd made up that ground, absolutely devoured it, made a mistake at the last, but still went on up the hill and strode away and won quite nicely, exactly the same as Paisley Park did. Didn't look to be going too great rounding the home turn, but you know he's got that finishing burst that you need in Stayers Hurdle. When he needs to produce it, he can. So as soon as you kind of saw him, Aidan pull him out towards the stand side and he started making ground, you know, I said to a mate watching, this is as good as over. Paisley Park has won this. Because you could see the ones in the front, they were kind of treading water a little bit. Yeah. He was the finisher. He did make that mistake at the last heart and mouth time a little bit. But he just strode on really, really well up the hill. And I think he's the archetypal Stayers Hurdle horse that you need. He's not going over fences next season. Apparently, he's going to stay over hurdles. I think he could win two or three of these because he is that. He's just got everything you need in the Stayers Hurdle winner. And you almost like to see them come off the bridle and finish it like he does because that's, you know, it's an extreme test. So I find it hard to think of a horse who might dislodge him next season. I think he's got it all in front of him to have a similar campaign, to win his long walks, to win his Cleve hurdles, and to come back here next season and, you know, go and win it again.
Yeah.
It's a big price at 5-1, isn't he?
Well, I think he is.
Yeah.
If they get him there, I mean, that was a really taken performance. Look, in the build-up to the race, I'd got it wrong. I was kind of going to people, look, this horse is like Big Bucks, but you're just judging him on what Big Bucks has achieved. Everyone's talking to him about this, like, ideal mould of a staying hurdle type, but do you really want one like that? And then the night before the race, thankfully, I looked back at a lot of the stayers hurdles and I held my hands up and said I was wrong. And after the race, I certainly was wrong because he might look like he's slow and he might look like he's kind of hitting flat spots and stuff.
I think maybe have we over-egged this though? Because he is quite a fast horse in the finish.
The amount of ground he picked up from the turn in, in the matter of three or four strides, he'd gone from about six lengths behind to jumping the last in front. It was, he's got a turn of foot. Like, he's not slow.
Yeah.
He's not just a plodder who's grinding these out. He's winning with oodles in hand.
We don't know how good he is yet, do we?
He's just a bit lazy, that's all. Yeah. As long as they're responding. And the good thing is when they hit them flat spots and they are a little bit lazy in the work, etc., as you saw with Big Bucks, they can go on to dominate this division because he's not giving too much away. You wouldn't want a horse like Fahina who's just tanking through the race all the time because their longevity is not going to last.
Exactly.
Well,
we'll move over to Stu. Stu, an element of this race that I really enjoyed, apart from obviously about the owner and the trainer and the jockey, is that we had Fahim running such a great race in defeat. You know, people love to see champions like him come back. And although he didn't win, he still contributed to a great race. And Sam Spinner, it was good to see him back to his best as well for Connections, who are going through a bit of a tough time.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it was one of those, sort of from a journalistic point of view, it was one of those where there were just so many great stories in there as a race. I think Sam Spinner, it was great to see him back because, I mean, that would be the only concern with Paisley Park is he has had the season of seasons this year. Everything has gone right for him. And the one thing that it's pretty easy to say now is it will be very hard for everything to go as well next year.
Yeah.
So that is the only real thing.
Do you think it's wise that they've said, oh, we're going to put him away for the season? To me, I think, he's been on the go for a long time. time now. Seems the wise move.
Absolutely. He's had a long season. He's done everything he needed to do. And like Watsy said, you look at him, he's the most obvious winner of this race for the next 2 or 3 years. So yeah, I would be up for minding him. But Sam Spinner shows kind of what can happen to these horses. He was last year's horse on a crest of a wave. He's hit a turbulent time. He's had a difficult time of it. The fact that he bounced back, that was great to see. And Faheen, I mean, what more can you say about him? He's an absolute superstar. To see him run as well as he did, as for as long as he did, and really look turning for home, like, oh, hang on a second, he might just win this. Like, that was sensational. Yeah, it was one of those. And straight off the back of the Ryanair with Bryony and Frodon. Like,
it was a magical few hours.
It was a real emotional wave through that afternoon. And it was just fantastic to see.
Yeah, it was good for racing. Now, obviously, I really like Ruby Walsh's comments after the race, how delighted he was with Faheen, even though he was beaten. Willie Mullins, his boss, would have been even more delighted to win the Gold Cup finally after 20-odd years of trying with Album Photo under Paul Townend taking the spoils. Not a result that I think many people would have necessarily predicted. He wasn't friendless in the betting, but it was a bit of a muddling Gold Cup, wasn't it, Watsy?
Well, it's a funny one if you're Willie Mullins, because you're watching the race, you've got four horses. Kenboy goes at the first. Bells Hill gets in no sort of rhythm at all and has blundered away his chance by about the fifth or sixth fence. Obviously, it's very unfortunate what happened to Invitation Only, his other horse. So you're three down out of four. And then the fourth one comes and saves you. And he ran an absolute blinder. He's in the right. Paul Townend had him in a good position. Had him, winging his fences. He had the box seat all the way through. And he saw it out really, really strongly. And I've got to say, I struggled to see it coming. He would have probably been a good second in the RSA last season, but well behind Presenting Percy.
Yep.
We think he would have won at Punchestown before, what happened to Paul Townend, had his brain fade. And then we've only seen him once this season at Tremor, and I that's probably a first. And I don't think there's many Gold Cup winners that have a prep race at Tremor. it was a slightly unusual one, but it's always the case with Gold Cups that certain horses will relish the occasion and come to the fore, and others won't.
Do you see him doing it again?
I think it's hard enough to win it once, let alone twice. That's what Native River kind of showed this season. It's a mighty, mighty hard race to go and back up in. And he's young enough and lightly erased enough to come back again next season. Of course he is, and I'm not ruling him out by any means. But I thought we might come on to the RSA in a minute. I thought that threw up two very credible contenders for next year's Gold Cup already. But no, it's great for Willie Mullins to finally get the monkey off his back. He's deserved it. He's finished second enough times. And and if you want kind of ones for the future, then Annabelle Fly probably ran a beautiful trial for the Grand National. If you're on him at a good price for entry already, then you would have been very encouraged by that.
Yeah, Stu, what did you make of the runs of those in behind as well? Clanders Oboe, his stamina just looked to ebb away in the soft ground, might bite. It was a similar story to what we've seen all season. That spark was there and then it was gone. My Boy Thistlecrack just never really showed, and his jumping got worse as the test went on. Presenting Percy, it's come through that he has a little bit of an injury, but he was never going a yard either.
Yeah, I think it was one of those. It was an interesting race. I spoke to Paul Barber afterwards, and obviously, as Watsy's already alluded to, Top of the Game was very impressive, and he sort of intimated that they probably go down the Gold Cup route with Top of the Game, and they'd keep Clanders Oboe for more the 3 mile contest. So the King George and Aintree probably.
See, that's why I think Paul Nicholls is so good, because if most people had a horse like that, they would run it in the Gold Cup, without question.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, one of the things I thought with Clanders Oboe, he'll be eight next year, and he ran in the Denman Chase, which obviously for Paul Barber, he's going to want to run in a race named after Denman, but that fell fairly close to Cheltenham, and I was at Ascot that day, and they said, all systems go for the Gold Cup as long as this doesn't take too much out of him. So I'd question going to the Denman Chase as a prep for the Gold Cup, but obviously they want to go there for personal reasons.
Yeah, River won that race before winning the Gold Cup, didn't he?
Yeah, he did, but that was his first run of the season, so it is slightly different. It wasn't like he'd been on the go for the season, and it was to put him. That was to put him spot on. It was kind of a serious piece of work, really, wasn't it, in his prep? So slightly different circumstances there. I thought Presenting Percy, didn't travel a yard, and plenty has come to light afterwards. Davy Russell said to the stewards that his saddle slipped. It came to light afterwards when the vets inspected him that he was lame. And obviously he's not run his race. He was beaten with a circuit to go. So I think the fact that he had Al Boom photo dead to rights in last year's RSA Chase would be encouraging if you're a presenting Percy fan. I think you can put a line through the race. We all talked about his very unusual build-up and prep. Mm. I would imagine they won't do the same thing next year if they can. Now, obviously, if he has a setback and they have to come into it off one run like Native River did, that is, they're the circumstances you dealt with, but I can't imagine they would choose to do that again. So I would see him having a very different prep. And actually, the three horses that I could see being contenders for next year's Gold Cup out of this year's race were Al Boom Photo, Presenting Percy, and Kenboy. I could very well see Annabelle Fly running on for a place again, but the rest of them I wouldn't be looking at for next year's race.
Okay, Parky, I'll give the final word to you on the Gold Cup.
Just touching on Presenting Percy, really. Obviously, that isn't the Presenting Percy that we saw last season, and as Stu quite rightly points out, he thumped Al Boom Photo. I know Al Boom Photo fell, but he was going to give him a good hiding that day. How many runs has Al Boom Photo had this year? Is it just the one? I don't actually know that. I think just the one. So in the build up to the Gold Cup, nobody's saying, "Oh, well, Al Boom Photo's only had one run. Are you concerned, Willie? Are you concerned?" I get it was over hurdles, it's not ideal. But had it been over fences...
It shows how underestimated Al Boom Photo was.
Had that run been over fences, then people would still have been going, "Oh, but you've only given him one run, why are you wrapping him up in cotton?" Well, this horse has got such an aura about him in Ireland, and people are so, like, obsessed with this horse. Presenting Percy. It went too far. The trainer should be just there. The trainer knew what he was doing. Yes, it's backfired, but I have no, there's no inkling in my mind that that was anything to do with his preparation. They'd have had that horse 100%. He never had an injury all season.
Isn't it part of the frustration, though, that the trainer won't actually talk to us and tell us about his season? Yeah. He could have had an issue, we wouldn't know, because he won't talk.
And I've mentioned this.
The owner probably doesn't even know.
But I've mentioned this on Twitter before, that it's not great for racing that the trainer of the Gold Cup favourite is not coming out and talking. But on the flip side, the owner is absolutely outstanding with his commitments to the media. He's always gives insightful interviews. He's always telling us what's happening with the horse. He's kept everyone in the light. So just because the trainer's not come out, I don't think that's a stick he can beat Presenting Percy with really now. And I certainly don't think that that was the reason why he ran so flat. There's obviously stuff come to light since, but that's just racing, unfortunately. It could have happened to any of them.
We like to see these horses, don't we? I mean, as racing fans, it's not nice when they don't run for whatever reason, if that be injury, if that be their campaign. So hopefully we'll see more of both Al Boom Photo, like you mentioned, and Presenting Percy next season. We'll take another quick break now.
Check out Paddy's Rewards Club. Simply place 5 bets of £10 or more across any sport in a week and you'll get a free £10 bet then next week. T&Cs apply. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
Welcome back to this final instalment of this Cheltenham Festival reviewing postcast. We're going to have a look back at some of the other races now, the Supreme being our first port of call, and it was like nothing had changed. Ruby Walsh, Willie Mullins and Classical Dream, a horse who really surprised me. Stu, I'll go to you first. This horse was really impressive.
He was very impressive. I was blown away by him. His times compare very well to the champion hurdle. From 6 out to the line, they were about 3.5 seconds quicker than the champion hurdle. So really, really solid performance. The only question I have with him, obviously, looks for every inch a chaser in the making. Physically, however, that very low head carriage would be a slight concern going chasing, and I wouldn't be surprised.
Why is that? Why do you think low head carriage alarm bells for chasing?
Well,
point of gravity a bit lower and stuff like that?
The fences are much bigger, so, you know, when he's where he carries his head, he can jump a hurdle and keep it there. He does pick it up for his hurdles, but, you know, where, like, he's going to see the full hurdle, isn't he? Where if your head's too low and you're going into a fence, it's actually can get above the eye line. And I don't like seeing horses with very low head carriages. Henrietta Knight had a horse, was it Racing Demon? He used to carry his head very low, didn't he? It's just, it always is a question mark going into a fence for me. So I wouldn't be surprised if for that reason we saw him over hurdles next year. And if he went down the hurdle route, I could definitely see him being a champion hurdle contender. The way he ran was very much, he produced a a performance up to the level already in terms of the comparison with the champion hurdle. It compares very well. Yeah. I thought it was very good form. There's a lot of decent horses in behind who didn't really run their race, so the race kind of fell apart in that sense. But yeah, I thought he was very impressive. The way he came down that hill and round the bend was very much like those Mullins horses of old. The Duvans and the Vorters and the Champagne Fevers. It was like just watching that on replay. And yeah, I was very impressed with them.
Yeah, Parky, I must admit, I was a bit guilty of dismissing that Irish form and thinking, oh, him and Aramont, who, by the way, I thought ran a great race for a long way, better ground he needs. But his jumping Classical Dream, it was absolutely flawless.
He reminded me of Vortura, I have to say. Look, that race... Classical. What's even more extraordinary about Classical Dream's performance is everything that was up towards the front has completely come back. Yeah. And the horses that have finished the race strongly, Stu mentions, in quite a quick time, they've come from the back. This horse has done all his work from near enough the front. His silks, as you could see on the race, were bright red and everyone else was covered in mud. So the horses that have been up there with him, you look at like Al Dancer flopped, Grand Sansea flopped.
Mr. Fisher wasn't great.
Mr. Fisher wasn't great. Angel's Breath didn't really... I know he found a little bit of trouble. Fakir Duderi ran on in the end. His race kind of like... he was prominent in the running order. I just think that was a very impressive performance. I get the temptation to go chasing with him because he does look like a chaser, but he hurdles like a hurdler. And that... can look the chaser all they want, but if they're very good over hurdles, then why
change
it? Happened
with Lorena, though, isn't it?
Exactly.
Last year,
and look, the champion, they've not got a champion, an obvious champion hurdle horse. I know Mellon didn't, obviously, he ran really well, but you can't see him winning a champion hurdle at any time.
Yeah.
I mean, would Willie Mullins rather win a champion hurdle next year than, say, an Arkle or a JLT? I'd be tempted to stick him over hurdles.
And what's he really quickly, just to finish, another masterclass from Ruby Walsh. I just think he rides Cheltenham so well, doesn't he? And he always likes to be at the front, I think, with him. If he has a choice, he goes forward, doesn't he?
No, the one point I was going to make, you know, the horse is very mentally good as well, because there was a false start to that race, and obviously you get a lot of razzmatazz and noise before the start of the Supreme, always from the stands and everything.
He caused it as well, didn't he?
Yeah, he was the one that kind of suffered most from the false start, and he went the furthest. I think he went right up to the first hurdle, and you think it might have upset him, but it didn't at all.
That's a good point.
He could have blown his brains out. It didn't, and he was still very good during the race, and so mentally he's got it as well as physically.
Yeah, we'll touch on those false starts, because I think it was an absolute farce, to be honest, and it is a valid talking point. I'm sure many people shared my frustration. Parker, you're laughing there. I just think standing starts are so unfair on jockeys.
It's the most stupid rule that's ever been brought into racing, the most stupid rule by a long way. How can they deem a start fine to start a race, and then you've got to do it different next time? There's too many hard luck stories. Why not just go back, walk them round, and start it again properly?
Yeah,
I haven't. It just makes no sense whatsoever to me.
And quite often they seem to be in good lines, and for whatever reason they didn't let them go.
Well, I mean, the starter, I don't know what the starter was doing that day. I think he'd been in the Guinness Village too often at the start. I mean, it was.
I feel for the jockeys, Watsy, because there's a lot of pressure on them. Big occasion. You look at races like the Arkle. Glenn Forza, he's a horse who wants to go out and trailblaze, and you know, through no fault of Johnny Burke's, did he not just didn't get the jump. I mean, it's luck, isn't it?
Yeah, and as Parky rightly said, if you have that standing start, then it'll help others and inconvenience others. And there's just one example. I remember on the last day watching the Martin Pipe, and there's a horse called Cartwright, who was fancied of Gordon Elliott's, who missed it by about 5 or 10 lengths. Still finished about fifth, had to make up loads of ground, but by doing that in the middle of the race, it compromised the end of his race. So if you're on Cartwright, you knew you'd done your money right from the word go, to be honest, and that was disappointing.
Yeah, exactly. I think the thing was this year, there were so many of them, Stu. What can we do to avoid that happening? Why did it happen?
Well, I think the reason it happened is you're going into the Cheltenham Festival and everyone's really eager to be getting on with it, you know? So the jockeys have to take a little bit of the...
I thought a few of those false starts were deemed false starts incorrectly myself. I looked at a few of them and thought, well, why couldn't he have just let them go? Maybe that's...
I thought there were some good lines and, you know, not just me, a lot of people saying, come on, let them go, and he didn't. And then, of course, it's too late. He missed a moment and it's gone.
Yeah.
The starter has to understand that it is the Cheltenham Festival and things are going to be walking in a little bit quicker than maybe they usually are, but there's got to be some sort of
I think the reason it all kicked off at first, off the bat on the Tuesday, was he was trying to establish some sort of control for the week.
Yeah.
You know, I think that is a major factor in it. This didn't happen sort of midway through the Thursday. Suddenly we had three in a row. It was
setting a precedence,
the first three races. And I think that was very much setting a precedence. But I don't understand why that couldn't have been done before the first race.
Okay, we'll move on. I mentioned the Arkel in passing there, won by Duc de Genevres. We'll give him a quick mention. I think personally for me, you know, the race fell apart a little bit. We had Lawler not running his race. Glenn Forza exited at an early stage. Kalashnikov, how unlucky can you get? And Duc de Genevres, I think it was a ground thing for him personally. Anyone particularly keen on him for anything next year, or are we going to be looking elsewhere?
Improving horse. It was a bad race. The good horses in the race didn't run the race. He kind of did. I think he is improving, but he's not going to be threatening. I mean, Aplutard, if you're looking towards the,
here we go,
the champion chase market, that if Altior's going to step up and trip and leave a big hole gaping in there, because there's not an obvious champion chaser in that Arkel. I've never seen a horse in a handicap chase absolutely destroy them like Aplutard did, and he kind of was prominent, and then the speed he showed to kind of flick away from them two to one out, that was seriously good. He's beaten the Arkel winner already. They'd kind of set him up for this race on his previous start. I mean, he's got to be in the, he's going to be a 160 horse at least, you would think.
And he's, I like your angle there. And I think, the notable thing was Rachel Blackmore obviously had a tremendous week as well. We talk about Bryony Frost as well, but Rachel just seems to get on with it with a lot of the less media attention. And she is really, really a force to be reckoned with, isn't she? I mean, she didn't need to be particularly good to ride Aplutard, but
she's as good a jockey as there is out there. She is, absolutely.
I think we're all in agreement on that. We'll move on for the Arkel now then and talk about a big talking point of the week, which was the National Hunt Chase, in which only four horses finished. Declan Lavery, he's appealing his ban that he got for riding third place Jerry's Back when the horse was apparently too tired to be finishing the race. Lots has been spoke about this. We've seen different images. It didn't make for particularly edifying viewing, Watsy, and you've got a particularly fun, I guess, idea on what you would do if you had your say on this.
I wouldn't call it fun. I think it's worth exploring. I think these long distance chases do have a place in the game. You know, I growing up, I always used to like a long distance chase. I used to love, obviously, the Grand National is the key one of the season. That's over the longest trip the horse can run over. There's loads of 4 milers in the calendar. There was one last week at Hexham. You've got the Ida. You've got this race as well.
Yep.
But obviously, that doesn't mean they're perfect, and they're not. You know, they can't be subject to tweaks every now and then. And I think this is a race that maybe doesn't need a tweak or two.
Produced Tiger Roll, Native River,
produced some excellent
Rocco
winners. Yeah. It's a very long way to go to ask novices to run over 4 miles. And so I think maybe if they looked at the criteria of the race, and I'm not picking on Jerry's Back because he was the one that kind of everyone focused on last week, but I was just having to look back through his record. Before the race, he was a point-to-point winner, but over rules, he hadn't gone beyond 2.5 miles. And I was just looking at his sire, which was Jeremy. Jeremy's been a useful National Hunt sire our Connor, but obviously he was a 2-miler. Jeremy on the flat was a 7-furlong mile horse. He was never asked to race beyond a mile. He won the Jersey Stakes at Royal Ascot. He won the Betfred Mile, and that's the distances that he raced over. And yet, we're asking a son of his to race over a distance 3 miles further than his father did. And it's not Jeremy's role in life to be producing 4-mile chases. Now, in time and with experience under his back, there's no reason why Jerry's Back can't in the future contest over these kind of trips.
Of course, very fast horses can produce very slow horses.
They can. There is always exceptions to the rule. But I think when you're looking at these things with a microscope and you've got all the attention on the race from outside sources and you need to be seen to be doing something, I think one thing they could go back to and look at breeding of horses. Now, if they can find this race to horses whose sires have won over a mile and 6+, so you're looking at Ledger winners, Cup winners, that kind of thing, it doesn't rule out, obviously rules out some sires, but you've still got some great ones in there. You've got Yates, you've got the likes of Cafe Tari, you've got Marla, Brian Baru, Midnight Ledger, Marteline, Westerner. So you've still got a really good pool of horses to go from. Mm. But you can be more sure of yourself that a horse will stay and relish those kind of longer trips if they're bred to do it.
Yep.
And it's just something that's common to a lot of breeding in flat racing and national hunt racing now, that people focus on speed.
Yep.
Stamina is kind of a forgotten word. It's a dirty word these days in terms of breeding because it doesn't sell. But we should recognise these long distance chases as rewarding guts and stamina and class, which shorter races don't. Mm. So we should breed more for stamina and make it a race, like I said, confined to sires who won over a mile and six plus.
Yeah, we could talk about this all day. It deserves its own podcast in a way. I mean, I suggested horses having maybe a minimum rating to get into the race, or having had a certain amount of runs over 3 mile, 3 mile plus, something like that. But anyway, that's for another day. A race that we do want to talk about is the RSA, which I think was one of the spectacles of the festival, Parky. We had Delta Work, we had Top of the Game, and we had Santini all coming in there and running their races seemingly, and Top of the Game came out on top under a masterful ride from Harry Cobden.
Yeah, what a race. I've watched this one loads of times already. It was a fantastic spectacle. Three very good horses, jumping expertly the whole way around, staying on well, produced a fantastic finish. The winner...
Opposites of a national hunt chase in every way. Well,
yeah, absolutely. And that, this is everything you've got to celebrate in racing. These three horses have come around in the same novice division. They're going to probably be going for the Gold Cup next year, and I'd probably have them 1, 2, 3 in the... That's, if I was pricing the market up, I would have them 1, 2, 3 in the market.
In that order, do you think?
I think, yeah, although... I mean, I think Santini's twice the price of... I think Top of the Game's around the 8-1 and Santini's 16-1. I mean, given the preparation that Santini had and how close he's actually finished to him...
Mm.
And but look, Top of the thing that I like about Top of the Game, he still gives me the impression that he's still a bit raw.
Yeah,
and
it's not the finished
a bit
article.
More to come.
Yeah.
And I've never seen a horse so big that, and he's got an ability to kind of get to a fence not on a stride,
yeah.
At which point he just lifts his legs over it. He's almost hurdling his fences, which is a massive asset, to the point where Harry Cobden can just steer him and produce him at the right time, really.
Yeah. He learned from Kempton, didn't he?
Yeah, he's not got to worry about hitting every fence on the stride, because he gets it wrong, he's just going to pop over it.
That's definitely what you want in a chaser. Guys, quick takeout from the RSA. Great race. Personally, I mean, I really like Delta Work, and I don't think the horse has ever run a bad race in his life. I think you can sort of excuse maybe the way in which the race developed with him. I wouldn't be surprised to see him back out and winning again. Santini, Parky's mentioned, not the perfect preparation, but a great race.
The front two will leave Delta Work behind next season.
Okay. Ignore what I said there.
No, I think they're two absolutely fantastic prospects. I'm not saying Delta Work's a bad horse by any means, and he ran well, but that was only Top of the Game's third run over fences. As Tom said, there'll be a lot more to come from him. Santini had a really troubled preparation, only his third start again over fences. There'll be a lot more to come from him.
Okay.
Some fantastic clashes next season to look forward to, because they'll be going for similar races, I think.
Yeah, and Stu, we'll move on to the JLT. I'll go to you first on this one, seeing as you didn't get... much of a say on that one. Deffy Desoy, Philip Hobbs, spoke about Paul Nicholls as a trainer. The job he's done with this horse is fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought it was a cracking race. You're talking about the Gold Cup picture. I'd chuck Lost in Translation in there. I thought he ran...
I'm liking that.
..the sort of race that, you know, if he wants to step up in trip, I thought it was very promising. I think Deffy Desoy, he's an interesting horse for me. I would almost be tempted to drop back down to 2 miles with him. I mean, we discussed Altior earlier. He looks like he's going up in trip. He'd probably go King George, and then from there you'd imagine he'd go to the Ryanair. King George would be an interesting race to prep for a champion chasing. So if Altior's not going to be there, it's a wide open division. And I mean, the way Deffy Desoy came up that hill, he looked to have a lot of speed, and yeah,
he's got his confidence with his jumping. It'll be an option for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other horse that I was really impressed with, thought he ran a great race, was Mengli Khan. This time last year, ran a cracker in the Supreme and looked a very exciting chasing prospect. Took a very long time to learn how to jump a fence, but he jumped a lot better on the Thursday, and you know, I thought he made a much better shape over a fence. Maybe going that bit quicker helped him. And yeah, I mean, he would be another one now that I would say you could be looking at in that division. I thought again it was a very strong race. There was real depth to it.
Yeah, Lost in Translation now. I think he's got to be firmly my second favourite horse in training. So fingers crossed he goes down the Gold Cup route next season. We'll move on to the Triumph Hurdle now. A real low point arguably one of the lowest points of the week, losing Sir Eric in that race. Parky, and there was just this horse, he really sort of invited people in and he had a lot of fans, and I mean, seeing him getting reshod before the start and then what happened, it really did make a big hole in the whole event, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, if you weren't a Sir Eric fan before, you would have been after watching him stood so calmly getting reshod. It's terrible thing for racing to happen on its big day as well.
Yeah.
You've got some clowns on the internet who are just desperate to make these things into something that they're completely not.
I agree, yeah.
And racing needs to be in a position to fight these idiots who clearly don't know what they're doing. Nothing untoward about it. It's an unfortunate incident.
Yep.
The horse promised great things. It's a massive shame for the yard. And look, nothing more can be said, really. Look, these things happen, and we've just got to move on. And unfortunately, these things are going to happen again. But racing just needs to continue to do what it's doing, looking after them and making sure that they have got the technology and the things to just prevent these accidents. But it could have happened in a field, you know what I mean?
I think we need to say that as well with, you know, Joseph O'Brien gave him x-rays before he was sent to Cheltenham. The reshoeing, I think, you know, I don't see how that could have anything to do with a leg break personally. But we'll move away from that and talk about the winner, Pentland Hills, who, again, was very impressive. Personally, I was looking at the race, I thought, Cur Sublime, he's tanking, he's been a bit of a talking horse. He looked like he was going to go and win the race. And Nicky Henderson and Nico De Boinville, this horse who had had one run at Plumpton, and he wins the Triumph Hurdle.
Yeah, it's extraordinary, isn't it? Apparently it's the same race that Nicky Henderson won with first bout before he won the Triumph Hurdle way back when. I think it was his first winner of the race. So, you know, we all say trainers are creatures of habit, and Hendo proved that again there. But great effort from the horse. I know he's come from left field a little bit, but if you watch the race back, he almost went at the first. He kind of took a false step or something after the first hurdle. Nico was almost shot out of the saddle. And he's kind of, if you're watching the race, you think, well, that's his chance gone.
Champion hurdle next year?
I don't know. I mean, he's got a long way to go, hasn't he? But all you can say is what he's done so far has been very impressive. He's done it all on the bridle. And to come from Plumpton to winning the Triumph Hurdle in a matter of weeks, you've got to be impressed with that.
Yeah, you have. Stu, quick word on Pentland Hills for the future.
Yeah, I mean, interesting, very lightly raced profile. I think they were all shocked by what he did. I think one of the things that's interesting about Pentland Hills in terms of the sort of champion hurdle picture, etc., would be Band of Outlaws, who won the Fred Winter, actually got a £1 higher RPR than the winner of the Triumph. He did it off top weight. He gave them all an absolute pasting. I don't think JJ Slevin had to pick up his whip. It was a sensational performance. So, you know, it'd be very interesting to see the two of them meet either at Aintree or Punchestown in the grade ones there. And I think, personally, I'd probably be siding with Band of Outlaws there, which, again, is only goes to sort of highlight what an absolute monster of a horse Sir Eric must have been. You know, and what a terribly sad loss he was. I mean, it's one of those things. I was there that day working, and the atmosphere changed that it
created. But doesn't that just show?
Oh, absolutely!
You know, people.
It was huge.
We
ripped
care.
My heart out the day. Yeah. It really did. It was very sad. But yeah, I thought Band of Outlaws was severely impressive. And yeah, Pentland Hills was an impressive winner of the Triumph, but. You know, I'd probably lean towards the Fred Winter winner.
Yeah, and on that note, before we wrap it up for today, let's just have one talking point, one takeout, maybe a horse to follow, something that you learned from this year's festival. Parky, I'll go first with you.
Two in the Ultima who caught my eye for the Grand National. One.
Oh, I can guess one of them.
Vintage Clouds ran an absolute stormer after Wind Up. That is an ideal prep for the National. I'm getting very excited. I didn't really want to see Tiger Roll run round with his head in his chest, but
Believe we've not mentioned Tiger Roll.
Vintage Clouds is going to get in at the bottom of the weight. He's going to. If he runs like that, I mean, I would be very excited. I think if a bit of rain comes, it's going to only enhance his chances. There's another in that race, one of Tiger Roll's stablemates, actually, who caught my eye, and that's Noble Endeavour. He was given a very sleepy ride by Davy Russell, and he was severely hampered by Give Me a Copper's unseating. He charged up the hill I think he finished, I think he was beaten into seventh by Knowles. But he charged up the hill. He was given a lovely spin over the national fences earlier in the season. He's got the right profile for a Grand National horse. He's the right age. He's got a touch of class about him. And after a bit of he's very lightly raced for a 10-year-old. I just think he's one that around the 50-1, 66-1 mark that's possibly gone under the radar.
Yeah, two Grand National fancies there from Tom Park. What's it? I like that, by the way, a sleepy ride. You don't want your jockey giving too many of those around Cheltenham, do you? Any thoughts?
Yeah, just to take out from the festival. Last year's one was a bit too much kind of Gordon Elliott, Gigginstown centred for me. I love it when...
Funny week for him, wasn't it?
Yeah, I love it when it's shared around a bit. And, you know, always used to be Cheltenham fairy tales in my youth of smaller teams going and conquering the big guns. And Croco Bay winning on the Friday, yes, for Ben Case. I thought that was lovely.
That.
I mean, Ben Case is a fine trainer, wouldn't get much Cheltenham material, though. And I think it just shows any prospective owners out there that it doesn't have to be about Paul Nicholls or Willie Mullins or Gordon Elliott. There are loads of good trainers out there who can train, given the right ammunition, and it's great to see them come to the fore.
A 12-year-old too, and I think he prepped for it at Worcester or somewhere like that. I absolutely love the bones out of that story. I know it wasn't a popular one for the punters, but anyway. Stu?
Yeah, just two horses that really caught my eye in the Pertemps, which has been a bit of a source of really decent... novice chasers the following season, Not Many Left and Cuneo, who were third and fourth, Jesse Harrington and Henry de Bromhead, 2 yards, who you'd say are very good at, with staying chasers and teaching one to jump. So yeah, the two of them really, really caught my eye. I'd be excited for them next year.
Excellent. So from today's postcast, hopefully you would have got some pointers for next year. It's going to be a long time coming for Cheltenham. But this week, there are some other postcasts to keep you entertained before Bruce is back on Friday with the tipping postcast. So make sure you stay tuned for those. Best of luck with any bets this week, and we'll see you soon.
Here at Paddy Power, we're the home of the Money Back Special, with some incredible offers every single week. Check out the website or app today. Terms and conditions apply. 18 plus, begambleaware.org.